Levels. Hey, what's happening, buddy?
Not much. It's Tuesday night. It's Type R Tuesday.
Type R Tuesday? Uh-oh, did you buy a car?
No, but I've been talking about it a lot.
Payments suck. Stop thinking about that for a while.
Oh, man, I don't know. So
car payments are the worst.
Here's my thing. I love my Civic. I love this car. But I would really, really like having a hatchback.
Right.
And Ashley's Subaru, she wants to continue to drive for a while. And I'd really like having a hatchback.
Why do you like hatchbacks so much?
Well, like, I can't. I mean, I went to, I guess was maybe a month ago. I went to Home Depot and I needed to buy a tile saw because I'm working on, you know, the shit at my house. And yeah, it wouldn't fit in the trunk because the height of the box was too big, even though it would have been spacious enough. It couldn't fit into the, the pass-through because I couldn't get the entire box in before the chairs or the seats started to incline back up, how it doesn't lay perfectly flat. So I couldn't get it through the pass-through, even though it would have fit.
Right.
It's like, okay, well, I love my SI and any person. Yeah. That's how I ended up having to deal with it.
So there's no problem. Stop complaining.
But I love my SI. If anyone needs a $5,000, everyday car, an SI is the perfect car.
Like, what's the year generation of that chassis? It's
06 to 11,
maybe. Yeah, something like that.
Let's look it up. I have an 08.
An 08 Mugen SI.
We're looking it up here.
That's getting to be an old car, 12 years old, but seems so new compared to all the shit boxes that I have in my life.
Well, I mean, I think once you get past a certain age, it's like, well, if it's not going to break, if it hasn't broken already, it's not going to break.
Right. And once everything's paid for, it's still paid for in 100,000 miles, so you just keep fixing it, right? That's my logic, at least.
Let's see. Production was from August 2005 to December 2010.
Okay.
Really good car, and I love it. And you can get standard SIs for super, super cheap.
Yeah, it's hard really to reasonable.
It's hard to imagine a better car for that money. It might be hard to get a fit at that price point that's in good shape.
Right.
It's the SI is faster. It's better.
And it's not even a car that even rusts out crazy, some of the older stuff. It was some of the newer Hondas that just don't. They don't.
They
die
didn't have great clear coat. So I've got clear coat peel on my bumper cover, and it'll apparently happen on the fenders and the hood eventually. But I'll probably go see Al's Auto Body to get that taken care of.
Yeah, the paint is definitely not the strong suit in that car, but good car, easy to work on still, it's but you want a hatchback. Why do you want a hatchback so bad?
I want more space, and we're going to have a kid, and I want more room for more stuff. And I think Honda is very clever in that they don't make an SI and a hatchback. If they made one of those, I'd be talking about that right now. What they have is the Civic Sport, which Jackie drove at Willow Springs last year. Mm-hmm. And it is a very cool, very capable car.
What's the difference? Because I think they're both 1.5 turbos, right?
They are, but the SI is turned up a little bit more, and I think there's a few other different parts.
Yeah. So the hatchback is turned down.
Correct.
For what?
Say what?
I said the hatchback's turned down. You said, yeah. And I said, for what? Come on. It's a great dad joke, dude.
That's a pretty good joke. Gap in the SI where they offer the coupe and the sedan, but no hatchback. And then if you want a higher performance hatchback, you got to get the Type R.
Right. Now, Mike Taylor's wife has, I think, a hatchback Sport, and they love it. They think it's the best car.
Cars. Most of this show is just me talking about cars that I'd like to buy. We'll see.
Or
if,
cars that you rode along in, or cars that you used to own.
Yeah, the glory days. Back in 82, right. I used to be able to throw a football a quarter mile.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I am interested if any listeners have driven or own one of the ILXs with the, I think it's an 8-speed DCT. I think okay. that car looks awesome.
Yeah, they're good-looking cars, actually.
I think the new Acura designs are terrific, but I don't know anything about that transmission.
The modern Honda stuff, like that hatchback, it didn't do much for me. The SI or the CTR, you know, the Civic Type R didn't do much for me. And now I see them and I'm like, dang, that's a good-looking car. So I really wonder, like, my opinion changed literally 180 degrees in the past 3 years or whatever.
Well, I think it's insane that a 2018 Civic Type R is selling consistently for like basically what it was selling for when it was new.
Yeah, well, they were like $35,000 cars new, like stripped out, weren't they?
Yeah, they're like mid-30s cars right now, used.
That's too much money, man. That's crazy.
It's insane. I mean, yeah, like,
I wonder how the design is going to age. It's probably going to age pretty well because people seem to like it more and more like every day. I don't know. Might not be the worst car, but it, yeah, when you can buy a 20 to 100,000 mile version of it, it might be pretty cheap. But right now, like 20,000 mile versions cost more than they did when you bought them.
Yeah, I know. Then that's like the thing that I'm, it's kind of a turnoff for me is I don't really want to pay that much.
Right.
But I was talking to Brad from Tire Rack about his SI, because I also think that car is pretty awesome. And so he was saying that, like,
his is an SI, right?
Yeah. He was saying that, like, highway driving his, you're going to get like high 30s to mid 40s on miles per gallon, which is insane. Yeah. Like, yeah, and his, cars. I think his car runs 44s or 45s at Gingerman. It's not slow.
Wait, is his car a 2-door or 4-door? I just saw it the other day. I think it's a 4-door too. So that's why I didn't know they made an SI 4-door. I don't know.
They
I don't
do.
Know the details
yeah.
of it. That's kind of rad, actually.
Like, I think, I don't know. They've been making SIs for a long time, and I think that they are just excellent.
I'm glad that they started making 4-door SIs. I think the first 4-door SI was your generation.
Is that true?
I think so, yeah. Everything else before that was...
Even
the
EK was
the only
a sedan body
sedans.
Style, but it was or like
two-door
only
coupe.
A coupe.
Yeah, 2-door coupe. Yeah, and the SI of the EG generation, 92-95, was a hatchback.
The EP3 was a hatchback, but only 2-door.
Yeah. Yeah, like a mini wagon hatchback. I think the first 4-door was your car, your generation.
It's a good option, man. I like those
makes
extra
a little
seats.
Bit more useful. I think it's smart, especially as the audience ages, to like keep giving them a more useful car.
Well, it's funny, right? Like styling for the Civic couldn't be more boy racer, but I've owned a WRX and an Evo before this, and it's like I'm 34, but that styling is always going to be like cool to me.
Yeah, you might be the target demographic. I keep dropping my phone off my knee because I'm in sweatpants. I keep seeing those cars and like, man, that wing is too big. I need to. I think I'm like one generation of car of like Honda guy in front of you. I don't know why. Yeah.
So my first Honda was an 04 Civic EX. It was a very, very slow, I think it was 117 horsepower, which was the higher output EX motor compared to the conventional Civic.
The D17 with VTEC, baby.
Ugh, gross.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm sitting in right now. That's my studio, is the EX.
Oh, yeah. It's very similar. Is it yours is EX also?
Yep. Yep.
Mine was a manual, though, so, you know, that was the car I learned how to drive stick on.
This thing is a slush box, a Slaughtermatic. It's pretty terrible. It's the best. It's like the best forgettable car, though. Like, and it's only got like, yeah, what do we got? I don't have the key, so I don't know. It's got like 110,000 miles on it. Like, it's a brand new car.
That's pretty light, man.
Yeah, we bought it with like, I think maybe it's got 115. I don't know. We bought it with like 70,000 miles, and she only drives like 8 or 10,000 miles a year. So
now, a car that I think is incredible that no one talks about at all is your brother's manual trans Civic Hybrid from that generation.
Oh yeah, yeah. His is an
what a weird car. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a manual trans Civic. It's basically, I think it's a real similar drivetrain to the CRZ too.
Well, he, at Road America, he and I drove around in it a little bit, just getting around the track to do stuff. And he was telling me about it in that, like, that car didn't sell that great because it was, you had to drive it differently than you would a standard manual trans.
Yeah.
In that you were always, effectively, you were always supposed to coast in gear. Right. And, you were almost never supposed to clutch in except for changing gears, because as the engine would wind down, you were charging up the batteries. And so when like you would normally clutch in to keep the car from dying, well, you didn't do that. You just like let the car die. Right. And that was how you made sure that the batteries kept cycling and kept charging. And he said he bought that car for like $2,500.
Oh, he went to Texas too, so it's like super rust free. He found it in Texas, and his buddy out there checked it out and picked it up, and he flew out and drove it home.
And he probably used one tank of gas to get home.
I think he had to put a set of tires on it, because like a set of like there was like a square set of tires on it because it was rumbling so bad. But he hasn't done much to it besides maintenance either, and the battery is still good on his too. I think it's like 150,000 miles.
That's wild.
Yeah, and I've always liked the wheels on those hybrids too. I think they're a little bit. I think the car is a little bit lower, and it's got kind of a unique, like flush-ish set of wheels on it. I've always liked that set of wheels.
But. I know that some people for eighth gens, if they're doing like road course stuff, time attack stuff, apparently the underbody trim work from the hybrids.
Oh yeah, of course.
Fits onto the other models.
Yeah,
and you can buy that. It'll lower the drag a little bit from the underneath, which is funny.
Smooth the underbody. I think the several generations of Civics have, like the VX EG chassis had like an underbody diffuser in the back, and yeah, that's been a thing. Gas mileage can be found in a lot of places. People can find it in plastic underneath too.
Yeah, the new SIs are just like so fuel efficient that it's really hard to be like, man, you know, K20s and K24s are awesome, but that 1.5 is pretty incredible.
Little turbo 1.5 can make some power too. There's people making like 350 wheel on like bolt-ons. That's kind of silly.
I don't know. Part of me really wants to keep my car and try and keep it clean. And that means driving it not every day, including in the winter. But at the same time, like your attitude has always been, well, just run it, run it.
Well, it's paid for. It's cheap. Like just drive it. I mean, even if you got to repaint the thing in 3 years, if you still want it and fix the dents and all that, like that's less than like the interest you'd pay on a new car.
For sure. The other,
but you're still driving an old car.
So. That's true. Yeah. Something else I wanted to say. Oh, Ashley and I were, I'm trying to wear her down, and she listens to the show. So this is my game plan.
You've been wearing her down for like a decade.
Yeah. Right. We've been
getting totally sick of you.
She, in passing, she was like, all right, you can get a Type R, but you've got to sell the Civic. And I like my eyes got kind of big, and she's like, no, that's not what I said. It's like, oh, damn it.
Yeah. Well, so if say you bought a new car, what would that mean for her? Cause she's the one who actually needs a new car.
So here's how this has worked. This is my game plan. So
right now you don't have any car payments.
Correct.
Do you want two new car payments?
So here's the thing. She says we can't have two car payments, but I've reminded her that it's not about how many car payments you have. It's about how much you pay in car payments.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
But what my strategy was, and this is my irresponsible, not yet dad strategy, was I pick up a Type R or an SI. I would be really excited with an SI. She keeps the Subaru until it breaks, and she's like, man, F this car, and then we get the van.
Okay. So then you have, what, $1,000 in car payments every month?
I would hope it would be less. I know that you can get 10-gen SIs for like 18, 19.
Okay. Which is like, it's cheaper like, than I thought.
Yeah, it's decent.
You could probably get like an 89,000 month lease on it or whatever.
Yeah.
Or you can stretch the payment out.
The Chevy dealers around my house are offering 84 month interest free financing, which is
oh my gosh.
I don't think there's anything in the GM lineup that I'm like dying to have, but it's like, well, 84
months
at 0% is insane.
Ugh. Like, do they have anything even comparable? Like, what do they got? A Chevy Cruze? That'll cost you $28 a month.
Well, like the Traverse would be okay. It's like a 3-row smallish SUV.
I guess.
But I don't know. Like, I'm a big advocate for like GM products in, you know, trucks and vans. But like GM cars, questionable. Unless it was an ATS-V. So,
or like a Z01 Camaro or something. Totally, totally bitching.
Yep. Speaking of, I won't say who, but we did entertain a rules request from yesterday about swapping in an LF4 into a rotary, used to be rotary powered thing. The LF4, for those that don't know, is the engine out of an ATS-V.
Right.
And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, that's the GM V6s can make some heat, man.
I mean, like, they make one of my buddies, the guy who tuned my Evo and tuned my Evo like a million times, has said that like even just a straight up stock retune, you pick up a mountain of power. And yeah, when you start doing like the basic mods, you can get up over 600. It's just like cool.
Yeah. Huge power potential too, like with just a tune and like an exhaust and an intake. Like, it's so crazy. That's so crazy.
I'd like to see more of that kind of stuff in street mod. I think an ATS-V in street mod would be very competitive.
Yeah. Especially with some of the, with some weight reduction and like the rear wheel drive car. ATS-V is just rear wheel drive, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's a lot. You can put decent tires underneath that thing, 285s, you know.
Speaking of decent times at Gingerman, if listeners haven't watched Jackie Ding's latest video of him testing the Supra at Gingerman, maybe you should do that.
Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe, you should watch the whole thing, including like after the credits. Just like there's like a second in there that you probably want to see.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's really fast. It's really fast. It's a little bit too fast.
Cars these days, man, all of our time attack drivers are insane. Like, even the street class cars are faster than we ever thought they should be.
Yeah, time attack is so broken, dude. Like, I think we have like the least broken version of time attack that you can have. But this beast eats itself, man. Like, where does it end?
You know,
man?
We keep saying that, but there's always fresh blood. It's like, and then like there are people who are in it for like a while. It's like, what are you guys doing here?
I know, I know. I was Austin Hurdle with. He's got a 370Z. He did real well in Time Attack last few years in street class. He was texting me today about. He's reading the rules a little differently than I am, right? He's looking at like the letter of the rules, and I'm like, but over here it says this, and no, you can't do that because it says it over here. He's looking at each line, right? He's trying to find all the weight he can find to get out of the car because he's running from the turbocharged four cylinders. I feel bad for all these drivers. Like, they're just, it's like a never. Because you know everybody else is going to go faster, so you got to go faster. And, like, how do you go faster? Especially when you're at the – if you watch anything that Austin Hurdle ever did video-wise or whatever, like, that car was as sideways and as hucked and as – like, he was trying to be – he was getting every tenth out of that car that he could.
No doubt.
or just about, like, that's a stressful place to be. I feel bad for the drivers. I'm like, I'm sorry that we gave you this terrible thing to do.
it's crazy because when I was driving, I'll be the first to admit that I wasn't very good. But at the time, like, the competition wasn't that stiff. And
well, everybody else was like just as average, like, as everybody else.
Decent. You know? Fine. You're fine.
But you weren't slow. If you go to any HPDE at that time,
you were like
frame,
really like, fast at an HPDE, but you were not fast in time attack.
Bad MF-er. And now these drivers have all found all the time, and now they're all going crazy trying to find more. And I feel
the driver level is good, and now it's like, well, what else can I do?
Yeah,
and it's getting to the point now where they're like sharing data, working together, trying to go faster, and it's
hiring coaches. Hiring coaches is the thing that's happening now.
Oh, I was unaware of that.
Yeah, like they're like paying pro coaches. They're having data analysis done. Like they're doing everything they can. It's crazy. It's a weird time.
I feel like the worst kind of drug dealer, because it's like,
I know.
Hey man, you coming back next year?
And I literally feel bad because everybody's like, man, you gotta keep going faster, you gotta keep buying more drugs. Like they're selling their bodies to go 1/10 faster at Stupid Gingerman.
I saw a quote somewhere. It was like on a meme or something. It basically said, "Racing makes heroin addiction feel like a small craving for something salty."
Mm-hmm. That's a good quote. I've seen that one for a decade. That's a good quote. I forget who said it. I forget who said it first, but it's pretty true. Like lately, I've been so, like, weirdly, I've been so busy. I thought about 5-6 weeks ago, I was like, man, well, I guess in a couple of weeks my business is dead. I guess I'll have some time. And then it just never died, and it turned out like everybody else started to die, and then everybody's like, hey, that Adam kid, he's not on meth, let's hire him some more. And I'm tired, and I'm busy, and I'm too busy, and grid life is like still a job, and like I look at my race car and I'm like, why do I still have this thing? Like this is like the worst idea. I should just stop. I should just street drive it. Like, racing is so dumb. And then I went to the racetrack again, and I was like, oh, I need to buy that next transmission.
I've got a set of wheels in my garage, and I need to buy some tires and see what happens. Maybe I'll get some of those new Falcons.
You should. I think we have a really good relationship with them. You should get some of them 666s.
Just to see what it's like, and I need to pick up some brake pads. 660
or 666?
Yeah, 660.
Yeah.
And I need to pick up some brake pads, and I think with like those two things, I'd probably set it up and leave it.
Yeah, it would probably be a pretty good car, until you went to the track and you needed it to be better.
I would bet that if Brad from Tire Rack got in my car and his car, I bet you the 10th gen would be 2 to 3 seconds faster.
At least one or two. Yeah, it would be faster. It would definitely be faster.
Because he has like torque, and you can put a monster tire down underneath.
K20 isn't like a terrible car for torque, but it's not the best either. But
I think you and I have talked about this a little bit. I would really, really like to see some adjustments in the street class rule set to find ways to get those 1.5 turbos into a level playing field, because without some kind of modifiers, you're never going to beat a 2-liter turbo car ever.
Probably not. Yeah. And also they're 10 years newer, so they're carrying a little bit more weight, like weight per original horsepower, than like an Evo or like an older WRX.
We have seen some guys getting a little bit clever in street class about what you can do and can't do. And I don't want to give out everybody's secrets,
Right.
But there are some certain cars with some certain trim levels that allow you to do some certain things.
Yeah. But the STI and the Evo do have a little bit of a leg up on like an SI Civic Turbo. But
yeah. And I do think it would be hard.
It's like an impossible task, man. It's an impossible task.
Yeah, well, I think the challenge is the approach has always been find ways to make the series as inclusive as possible without creating like overdogs, right? So right now Street Class is actually all of our classes are running really, really well. They're all very highly contested with different builds, different setups. And so now the question is, how can you add more cars to the competition? More variety messing everything else up.
Yeah, but my like 86 Renault B5 something doesn't fit anywhere. What are you going to do for me? What are you doing for me now, man? What are you doing for me with my Yugo? It doesn't fit anywhere.
That reminds me of my 84 that dude that showed up at the Shenandoah circuit with that green Audi 5000.
That thing was so dope.
This car was so rad.
There's some really cool, unique, but I don't even like. There's some cars that when they pull up, I'm like, that is not going to do well, and I don't care because that car rules. Like, and the same thing with like every average like Honda Civic that's like swapped and like super clean on some cool wheels. Like they pull up in a Time Attack, and I'm like, yeah, dude, check out my Instagram. I got 10,000 followers. I'm gonna kill this. And then like some basic whatever street mod car passes him 6 seconds faster. But like it, you can't fit everybody in. But
that's true. But I also like, I would expect those cars to start becoming more available for track cars for people because they're like, they're not crazy expensive and they're good and you can make power.
Yeah, it's hard to find that fine line of accessible. Time Attack class or inclusive Time Attack class, and also like having 87 classes of Time Attack.
Sure. I think Street Class is really, really inclusive and it's the lowest barrier to entry. But like, just because the cars are minimal prep, I think people's perception is that like, standard HPD driver could like just jump in and be competitive. And it's like, no,
that's not
dude,
how
like,
it works.
The same drivers have been doing this for like 5 years and they're invested.
Especially when you look at somebody like Josh Halka, who's he's reading the rule book and you look at Spaz and Spaz is like,
Josh Halka is doing pro level work.
Yeah. They're really like, crazy research into like, okay, what's the craziest turbocharger I could find from any Subaru ever that would applicably meet the rules? And it's he's not looking for 100 horsepower, he's looking for like 10. It's not everybody's looking for 10 horsepower and 10 less pounds over and over and over. And I don't know what to expect. I don't know what to expect this year, but
I know that what was it? Joel Morrison was asking me about when we're going to allow dog boxes in street mod. And I was like, I don't know, man, you bend too far and you'll break. But what I'm really enjoying seeing is people toying with the idea of pulling a trans out of this to put it in that, because, it'll give you a performance advantage here and here. But, maybe it takes some fab work or something like that. I know that street mod is like street cars, but seeing people really do things that haven't been done before in the automotive world is pretty exciting for me.
Yeah.
It's a different challenge than Unlimited, right? Like Unlimited is an example. Like, you want the best transmission, you go buy a sequential from the company that makes sequentials.
Right.
But that's because the rule set is open. When the rule set's closed, you got to be more creative.
Yeah. I think we're going to see the most innovation in the next 2 or 3 years. Like because people have found the bleeding edge of like the first time they read the rules and like, oh, okay, I need to build that. And that now they've read the rules 30 times and they've gotten through 2 or 3 years and they're really And now they're really getting stupid. So it might be a fun year to see what
it was. Yonkers last year at Road America. He had done UMI's King of the Mountain the weekend before, right, and had pulled as much weight out of the car as he could and was feeling, I don't know, maybe just a little lazy. So he didn't put the factory dash back in. It was in the car, but it was in a cardboard box and it was ratchet strapped to like the roll cage.
Yeah, we had to make a rule change for that one.
I looked at it and I was like, ah, oh, dude. I mean, like, yeah, you allow it, but like now we got to make a rule.
Yeah, we had to make a rule for old Brad there. But
so one of the things that I think is really fun is seeing drivers, just seeing how far they can push without over pushing, you know, because like it, as maybe as an example, like James Houghton's TSX, right? He did a crazy build and it's very fast. But if it's too dominant, there'll be rules adjustments, right? So you, right, how do you get to the point where you just like, you're still in the front, but you're not leading by so much that people raise an eyebrow.
And I think it's different for every class too. And you need to have data on the cars. You got to see them a few times. You got to see how they do at this track versus that track, you know. In the case that you're talking about, like Houghton versus the other cars at Circuit of the Americas, he didn't run the fastest lap of the weekend. He didn't even like put that dominant of a show on lap time wise. He just had a better car for the first five turns, and then he just kept that advantage, you know.
It's the coolest GLTC build I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was a lot of thought put into that thing. I mean, he thought about that thing. He was one of the first people that messaged me when the rules dropped, and he was thinking about it from a different perspective than most of the other drivers.
I think he was looking at it as a time attacker. It's just different.
He was looking at it differently, and he was doing it for a year, and then he won a weekend, his first weekend out. So, racing is hard. Racing is dumb. Why are we doing this?
I don't know, man.
When I went to that to the event a few weeks ago, I almost didn't go simply because it's just utterly exhausting to do. Like, this is just exhausting, and I'm just sick of being tired and busy all the time. I don't know how some of our drivers have done it for so long. It's my hat's off to them. I mean, we're talking like 5-10 years of commitment for some of these drivers. And it's just like, it's all they think about and it's all they do. They go to work and they just try to make enough money to do the next thing.
So who's been the most regular? I can think of people that I know that have been the most regular since I got there. But right, like, I don't remember Grid Life 1 and 2 because I wasn't there. I mean, I know Andy was involved kind of from the beginning. But I don't know who else was there. And so like, I think of Spaz as being one of the guys who's been around the longest because he was there in 16 and he's been around competing every year since then.
Some of the early first year guys were really just HPDE guys that were like, yeah, lap timer seems cool. What do I run? And after that, like, I mean, Houghton's been around for most of the time.
I think his first year was 16. I remember meeting him and Chris.
Yeah.
While the RS Motors crew kind of didn't molest, but were just like really peeking into the professional awesome car. And Mike and Dan had told Chris and James to like, you know, get up in people's face if they were messing with the car. And so we're all looking in this car, we're having beers and, you know, at the end of the night. And Chris came over and he was like, hey, you guys need to leave that car alone. And Andy was like, no, man, it's cool. You know, we know these guys. And Chris was like, I don't know, man. They told us to be like, keep an eye on this stuff. So you guys need to leave.
I can't even imagine that happening.
It was so fun because like, Chris is the nicest person in the world.
I'm trying to think of like some pre-2016 drivers, and there's still a lot of them that are like semi-regular, but as far as like the front runners, like that crowd moves around a lot, you know.
Well, like we've had I don't know what you guys call them, but I call them gangs, right? Like Hard Times and Ramblers and Twerk Team and RS, like the gangs have been around a long time.
Most of them have been around the whole time.
Who like shows up to compete consistently every year? There aren't that many people.
Yeah. A lot of the regulars only come to two or three events too. Or they'll like show up to like instruct or like just hang out. But like, as far as like putting tires on the track and like banging it out every single freaking event, that's a rare thing. Like
Jackie started showing up in 2017, which was the first year that I was competition director, and he's been consistent since then, and he's grown his YouTube channel considerably since then too.
Yeah, he's this would be his 17, 18, 19, 20. This is his fourth season. Yeah. I think, was he at an event in 2016 or no? I don't know if he was.
I don't think so. Because I remember when he showed up to Mid Ohio. First, no one knew who he was. We certainly didn't. And I remember at the awards ceremony, his first name, he goes by Jackie, but I think his Chinese name is not Jackie. And I think that's how he was registered. And I remember you said it wrong. And I was like,
I forget how I said it, but I said it like, it sounded like John on the video or something.
Yeah.
I think it was G, I don't know how he says it in Chinese, but if you say it with a fat American tongue and you say it poorly, it sounds a little bit like Jiang.
maybe we should call him up and see. I'm going to text him right now.
Yeah. Say what's his birth name and how do you spell it? And I can't remember. It was a long time ago. That was like our first year at Mid Ohio.
So what else is on your mind?
I got to fix my race car. There's a bad wheel bearing and there's a bunch of dirtiness. It's filthy and stuff. And I just haven't wanted to. It's not going to be a bad fix. Like overall, the car did really well. I've been working on the RV though. I've been doing floors. Floors are almost done, about halfway through the bathroom, and I got to do one more side of the bedroom, and then the floor is done, and then I get to clean the entire RV because tearing the old tile out made a huge mess, and we're going to try to go camping in the next couple weeks, me and the girls, so I've been focusing on that a little bit, but also, Mike, doing two nights a week of like esports announcing is cutting into my productivity.
So, yeah,
it's wearing me down. I want to go to bed, and I don't want to work on. I don't want to work on anything else. But
so I think we should pause for a minute to thank our partners, and then we should start up on Anchor with Jackie Ding.
Oh, are you serious?
I'm for real.
Well, man, it's we're already 40 minutes into this thing. How about we do another show? I'm getting tired, dude.
You can't pass up an opportunity to talk to Jackie.
How about, can you just record the Facebook call? That might work better.
Not without changing a bunch of stuff.
All right. Anchor makes me mad, but I guess it shouldn't make me mad. It's pretty good.
Hey, Jackie.
Oh, hello.
How are things?
Not too bad.
So we live in an interesting age in that Adam and I were just talking about you a little bit on the podcast, and I said, why don't we just call Jackie and record what he has to say?
Oh, no. Okay. Yes. Hi, I'm here.
So you were doing something last weekend that I don't know about and you can't talk about, but the weekend before, you were at Gingerman.
Yes.
How did that go?
That went very lovelily. I had a lot of fun. It's just been great to get back to Gingerman. I mean, I think it's the first time I've got any Supra onto Gingerman. It's just great. It feels great.
So changes you've made in the last couple of months are you've upped power a little bit because tuning is getting, I think, a little easier. Is that fair?
I believe it is more. It is a little better. I wouldn't call it more power because I think we're still at about 460, 530 as before. But all it is more drivability. We gained before in Coda trim, we didn't really have the partial throttle. That was just something AMS and us really struggled with to begin with. But that's something they figure out in the last few months and finally able to get it on the car. And it drives great, spools like stock and just goes faster.
So I know that early you had struggled a little bit with some electronics difficulties. Was most of that just related to be like an underpowered battery?
Some of it, yeah, some of it. I believe when we switched to the anti-gravity, we went with a 30 amp hour, and that's when we had a little bit of a more of an issue. Sometimes on track, I think it was discharged a little quicker than we'd like. Since then, we switched to a 60, the largest capacity they offer, and it's been smooth sailing so far. One thing I learned, apparently these new BMWs, I'm sorry, Toyotas, they disconnect the alternator while they're under full load. And our car, being a track car, only lives at full load. So, never... so you know.
That's really... not helpful at all.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. So it's been better, though. The 60 battery has been perfect. So not an issue.
So what else have you changed recently? I mean, we saw the car in February at COTA, and you had done really, really well. Not only did you win, but you probably went faster than most people would have expected in that car.
Well, us too.
What's changed since then?
I think it's just a small couple touch-ups. We did a new AMS intercooler. I'm sorry, it's more like a heat exchanger, since it's for the water-to-air intercooler system. It cools the water, and then goes and cools the air. It's a much larger core. It's not aluminum end tank, a full billet end tanks, which looks amazing, and it works really, really well. I think before at COTA, we did it like two laps before it dropped like 13 to 15 miles per hour top speed. At just hot laps, on the seventh lap, the top speed only 3 miles an hour different from when it was like first lap. So just the overall reliability and the drivability has been improved many, many times over. And I think we're still dialing the setup a little bit. It's hard to like get away from the fact that Gingerman is still only our third event with a car. It's the third time we've ever gotten it onto a racetrack. So it's the first time we're able to run it like kind of stress-free, not having to, oh God, we've got to go do a time and just learn more about it. And we did learn a lot. So
what are the next major fixes, I guess? So once you get, a few odds and ends related to aero, repaired, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
What additional developments coming?
So we can also talk a little bit about that. I think aero, the split aero package is excellent at the moment. It's just where we mounted it to on the chassis isn't actually as strong as we thought, and it broke that part of the chassis, which is one, it means our aero really freaking works. But we need to reinforce that. We'd like to, as soon as border reopen, go back to stage sport to finish up our provisional aero package, which would include the side skirt and the rear diffuser, to really help make the OE flat floor a little more efficient and help it work better. We want to do a little more weight reduction. That includes a lot of the airbags that are still inside. The car weighs currently 3,400 pounds with us.
It's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I was talking with Adam, having watched your footage that you released today. I mean, obviously he's like working, so I'm telling him a little bit about it. And the car looks really, really composed, and it's really fast, but it looks like it handles kind of like a heavy car.
Which, yeah, I would agree with that. What's surprising to me, though, is it looks heavy, and in reality, it doesn't feel as heavy as it perhaps looks. And also on data, it matched my S2000, which is very light, and I was pretty quick in the corners with it. And every single corner, and beats it in the aero sections. So it bends my mind. I don't understand.
Well, I had seen some data overlay with a very well-known Viper ACR coming through, what was it, like 7 to 10 from Gingerman. And you made up a lot of time there. And I've been in the Viper in that section, and it's very fast.
Oh, yeah. I think beating the ACR in the aero sector, where, you know, the ACR is literally famed for having that crazy aero package, that speaks a lot to what we've been able to achieve with ours in a pretty short period of time. And it just makes me want to say, hey, let's chase down this route further, because obviously we're doing something good with it, right?
So how much testing have you done to try and dial out some of that downforce so that you can gain a little bit more top speed? Do you think that you're balanced right now and the car is exactly how you want it to be? Or do you think that you have more than you need?
I think the handling balance is actually pretty close to being perfect. I think in the video we released at Gingerman, we perhaps need to soften the rear sway bar a little bit and play with a little more rear toe. You could tell on corner exit it was getting a little hairy. We're still on like full soft front sway bar and full stiff rear. That was like the setup that kind of worked for us from Coda, and I think it's just a little bit too much here. Where you know you need that traction zone getting out of it, and the balance of the car was perhaps a little more oversteery than I would like. Once we get rid of that, I think aero sector and normal cornering will be a little better. But at the same time, I think the biggest our area that we're losing the most on is probably not with the drag, is more just a lack of top end. I think the car right now is very, very good at getting out of corners and has excellent response, but we do lose power after a peak power is at 5,500 RPM. And after that to like red line is 65, I'm losing, you know, actually the power and drops down to about maybe 420 by the red line. So sometimes maybe in short shifting just to try and get back into the torque band. So,
what's been your experience with the trans in that car? Because it's not a conventional mm-hmm. sports car yep. transmission, right? But it mechanically it seems very yep. reliable.
Honestly, my biggest concern jumping into the Super, like we talked like a month ago, was the transmission. And to this day, I'm still slightly worried, but it's not given me a single thing to worry about. You know, it's crazy reliable. It shifts lightning quick, perhaps not as quick as something you'd find in a Sierra Corvette, but it's still very, very impressive for what is the same technology as the ones that you see in your regular Camrys. It's incredible. It's incredible how quickly and how responsive it is on downshifts and upshifts. I think I might have been able to catch it just a hair out, you know, under some conditions, say like if I want to shift a little bit earlier, sometime into a corner, it would like perhaps hold it for a second, like half a second. Yeah, half a second is a lot in tracking terms, obviously, but on Gingerman, not at Coda. It happened a little bit at the track. I'm not supposed to disclose just yet, but you know, I give it a 95% out of 100 for how well it's performed on track. I think it's really surprised me.
And like, you know, keeping transmission fluid temps down and things like that, it's just been easy.
Well, we don't really have any logging for that, so we don't know. But I think it works. If it's
fine.
Exactly. If it's not broke, don't touch it, don't mute it. The less I know, the better, right?
Yeah, probably. So track season is seems like it's getting going yep. again slowly. You've got more development to do in 2020. What's your time?
I think AMS is pushing us very hard to try and get one, an oil cooler on the car, to some form of turbo upgrade. They've been working very hard on their custom Garrett turbo kit, but I don't think that'll be ready for us before the June event. I think in the meantime, we'll go with some sort of like a stock housing turbo upgrade that should be able to bump up the car to something like a. Yeah.
Well, as a time attacker, I know when those cars mm-hmm. first came out, a lot of people were trying methanol injection, and it seems to work mm. really well. I don't know. I mean, if you're not planning on running like 30-minute sessions, do you have a personal opinion on why you wouldn't run methanol in the current situation?
I guess it's my belief of being a street car, you know? I kind of, maybe this, call me stubborn, but I feel like a street car, you should just be able to put gas into it and just go, right? Yeah.
Maybe. I know that the guys who do meth injection on the cheap will use like the winter grade washer fluid. That right. seems to work just fine.
I'm not very knowledgeable on the methanol injection subject. I've been told to kind of stay away from it. AMS is also, you know, very much trying to work on getting more power out of the car without going to nitrous or meth. Their drag car actually put down 650 horsepower and ran a 10.2 in the quarter mile. Without nitrous or meth, which I think is the fastest.
How'd they do
just
that?
Buy a gigantic Garrett turbo and excellent tuning.
Oh, there you go.
Know? Which is why I believe in the guys so much. The guys there work their asses off, and you know, some of my great friends working there now, and they've been really, really supportive on the program. So
yeah, they've been absolutely. Around a long time, and I think they're, you know, obviously they're really well known for their yep. GTR stuff, but before that there were Evos, and you know, they've done one lap, they've done yep. time attack racing, they've kind of done everything. And I'm sure there is a person there that can answer a racing related question.
Pretty much whatever. So, the goal is for AMS to be able to, you know, not only support me more and more, but see if they can bring out the drag Supra alongside our Time Attack Supra to what was going to be the Midwest event. I think we still be able to do it even in October. I think it'll be not only a cool attraction, but be able to say, hey, this is the engineering prowess of AMS, you know, not only being able to go sub-10s in a quarter mile for now with a Supra, you know, and then also be able to try and be really competitive in a Class A street mod. So I think we'll be able to do really good things. More power is coming. But at the same time, we're doing more surge tank with the fuel. We're doing some more lightweight. We're doing more corner suspension, fine tuning, and more aero. So the car should be getting.
Tell me about the mm-hmm. fuel setup on the car. I know it's stock. But I assume there's a low pressure pump and a high pressure pump.
No
is that
idea.
Right?
I wish I could tell you. The most I can say is I believe the car is a little more fuel related at the moment. I was told that by some sources that the fuel system on the car is kind of RPM limited. So on the low end is running a little bit low, but on the high end, you're kind of more and more safer in that sense. It is already an upgraded B58 system compared to say something like the 340i's out of the BMWs, but it's still, you know, still run out after our 460 mark. So this is as safe as AMS were willing to go before I start risking, you know, our on track reliability. So.
Sure. Yeah. Now, I guess maybe the last question is you put down a really, really solid mm-hmm. time this weekend. And I was talking to you all day. Street Mod is very fast this year. And I think it's great to see the competition. How much faster do you think you need to go to be the record holder?
Hot dog?
By the end
I wish I could tell you, cause I'm looking at, you know, the data that we have with Luke and the ACR, and it shows me that up until turn 10, I kept up to all but 0.1 seconds. And then by the time we get to turn 11 after the straight, we lose a full second. What does that tell me? If I throw a whole lot more power at it, and if I can match a Viper, we'd be able to do 32s. And if I drive a little better, if I didn't have a traffic on that lap, would that mean 31s? You know, it. Right?
That would be weird.
Right?
That'd be weird.
It starts bringing questions in my head, and I'm like, oh my God, what are we doing here? You know?
Well, you were just a baby when this happened, but my first year at Grid Life was 2016.
Yeah.
And that year, Professional Awesome did a 29 in their unlimited car. And I remember this was way before James's car was as developed as it is now. I mean, he was very fast then. They were all really fast then, but we were like 29, man. That's
right.
No one's ever seen that before. And so now we're talking about like 31s in a street market.
Is it possible? You know, we're questioning ourselves too. We're questioning our sanity, you know? Like, is this possible? Is this doable? Maybe? Just maybe, you know? I don't know. I'm very, very curious. I think Dewey in the Boogeyman and Moss in the S2000 would give us a lot of trouble, but I think that's what makes Time Attack fun. If it's only a one man race or one car race, where's the fun in that, right?
No, I really don't think that it wouldn't be exciting at all if you guys weren't there battling each other and you weren't kind of friends in the process, where you're all. You know each other well enough that you know that you're not going to rest on your laurels. And if you decide to do nothing, you're not going to do well.
Well, I can
year.
Feel slightly happy knowing that even if Moss beats me, the bumper that's on that car was the one from my S2000. So it would be the first thing cross line before the rest of his car. Yes.
That's really good. But it's really late, and I've had you on the show for 15 minutes.
Jesus.
I'm sure you want to go to sleep.
It's okay.
So,
video editing.
But the life of a YouTuber. So I will say, you guys have opened a shop in Chicago.
The shop has been going really well. We've gotten a couple customers in and out. It's been really great having some you know, being able to support a lot of the people who are wanting to do Grid Life, who are around the Chicago area, who wants to get more into tracking. That's kind of our customer base at the moment. And I will have a little bit more Grid Life presence in the future. I think we want to get, you know, a few more cars out, a few more drivers who have been working with us to go out and do more competition with Grid Life, with GLTC, with Time Attack, and so on. So,
well, I did notice we just finished our first season of Grid Life iRacing tonight, and I noticed that your name was not on the list of people compete. What's going on?
A few weeks ago, we did the 24-hour with Ben Lane and Kobe from from Grid Life 3GT, and Harold, a friend who's on the East Coast, who might be competing in a few Grid Life events this year as well. And we did that for 24 hours. And after that, all of us just got really burnt out. I really wanted to try, but then this week, the weeks after the 24, which has been crazy prep for this whole East Coast trip. And I'm still in East Coast in my mom's house basement, just taking a little bit of a break with the Supra here. And after maybe by the weekend, in a few more days, we'd be heading back straight to Chicago and doing more stuff with AMS with the car. We need to repair the splitter, do a little more aero work, get more power, try and beat Dewey. You know the whole spiel. So it'll be fun.
Sure, yeah. Well, like you've been a street class driver. Yep. You were a street class driver for a few years. I'm sure you've seen the build series that the Benz had done on their street class cars. And the build qualities are incredible. I don't think there's any doubt.
I got to chase Ben's Evo, and I got to drive the other Ben's Civic this weekend. The Civic had, I think, a little bit of a problem with steering, with just a general alignment. And the other and the Evo had some issues as well. But they're like both getting very excited about it, and I think it'll be fun.
Do you think that those cars have the potential?
As soon as they get the alignment issues figured out, absolutely. Ben's Civic is wild. The power band, oh my god! It kind of makes sense to me why everybody wants to do a K-swap now. It doesn't. It's nothing. It's nothing. It's like nothing I've ever felt before. It's like an S2000 power band, but instead of the VTEC kicking in a 7, it kicks in a 5 just as hard as it.
And
yeah,
just
exactly.
Reps the whole
you
time.
Just go gear. Yeah, no, it's good. So,
and one more question. We started the show today talking about the Civic Type R and how I think I should buy one. And my question to you is, if you had a wife and if she told you the only way to get a Type R was you'd have to sell the Mugen Civic, would you do
it? Okay, so the Mugen Civic is very nice, but I think, just from the depth of my heart, maybe the FK8 Civic Type R is just a little bit nicer. I really think so. I've not driven one myself. I've driven FK7, the Civic Sport with the SI swap. The chassis is really good.
Yeah.
Dude.
So I don't remember. I remember you showed up to Streets of Willow, kind of driving with that team. I haven't paid attention to what kind of
that car's getting sold
since
then. Might have sold already.
Can you tell me the major differences between the Civic Sport and the SI?
Basically everything, I think. The engine is way better. The suspension is better. The entire package is just more racing focused.
SI.
Even the SI. The one I drove wasn't an SI. It was a normal Sport. And then
I'm saying compare the Civic Sport and the SI.
Sport and the SI. SI had a slightly better motor, bigger, more power, and a little more sporty tuned suspension. Not quite race spec like the Type R, but I think that's about it. And even if you do just get a Sport, upgrading to like a SI level shouldn't be too hard. I don't quote me on that. I haven't researched too much, but just from my experience with the chassis, it's excellent to drive. And I've been debating because since doing the 24-hour, I've done a lot of front wheel drive with that, right? And it's just been kind of like I've been bitten by the front wheel drive bug, and I've been kind of like just trying to find a place to release that energy, maybe a Hyundai Veloster N or like Type R, and just been trying somewhere. I don't know.
Well, I think you need to get back to your Honda roots.
Yeah, maybe a FK8 Type R. I want to, but Alex won't let me. Alex is like, it's a good car, but it's not that good, And maybe we'll wait for the GR Corolla.
It might be that good.
I don't know. I see people time attacking with them, but nobody has really been able to get it to a state where it's like super, super competitive, Like even the USR one is,
The street mod's a tough class, man. I know that when I was driving, you could be podium level with like 400 horsepower. I just don't think, unless you were a rock solid driver, I don't think you could do
that. I'm
wondering if the Type R belongs in street class, because if you can put 285s on and make some adjustments to the rest of the setup of the car, you might be able to, you might be able to get there. It's like 38s or so.
I think you probably could. I know the aero on that car is very good. So even factory aero is like high speed optimized. So some suspension work will be necessary. So a lot of cooling work will be necessary. But you know, I sent out a little post a few weeks back, and I got a lot of mixed responses. You know, some owners telling me, yeah, like, dude, it's bad. The overheating issue is really, really not that good, you know? So that's just kind of like been pushing me off that side a little bit. So, you know.
Well, I'm sure you could figure it out, right? So you'd want to remove like the grill pieces in the front and slow down air. And if you put some extractors in the hood that will allow you to get some air out, it's hard for me to imagine you can't keep the car cool.
Even you know, the USR guys have been trying a lot, and even they've been struggling sometimes. So,
well, I know that Tomo raced a couple of years, I think, in a couple of modified Civic Type R's.
Yeah, I remember that.
At Thunderhill, for the 25 hour. So like the formula is there. There must just be a way.
I'd love to see somebody do it right. And if nobody does it right, well, I guess if the market is there, we'll try to wade into that. But, you know, I think I'm still a little, I still have that root in the front engine rear wheel drive class, and I just like it. So we might be even looking into the new Z that might be on the horizon, you know. Working with AMS has been good. So we might try to continue that into new Z. But I would love to do something front wheel drive. I think that will.
There was a period of time where you said you wanted your S2 to be the fastest S2 in the country.
It still is. I think we just right now set like a little bit of an intermediate goal, you know, in between, since we're kind of stuck at home and everything. We took the engine out. I think that's going to go on sale in Trek New West tomorrow. After that is gone, we'll drop a K in it and just see how it does in street class. Cause I still have the same coilovers. I got the same aero back, and it'll be the same car that I ran a 440 flat with, just with a K.
Well, it seems like Andy's formula of those massive drag cartel cams and the K motor.
I believe it. I think Andy's a very, very smart man, and he knows what he's doing. So
he's also absolutely a very fast mechanic. That guy.
I wish he worked for us or something. But that would be nice.
I think you'd have to move up to the frozen north to get that to happen.
Not any further. Yeah.
Well, Jackie, I really appreciate this spur of the moment phone call.
Always.
Thank you for taking the time to join us. Adam struggled with this application because his phone is old and dumb. Not unlike him. We really appreciate your time on the phone, and
love you guys. Let me know whenever.
Cheers.
Yeah, take care.
Slip Angle was created by Austin Cabot and Adam Jabe, co-hosted by Derek Yarbrough, and production by Abram Schmucker, who mixes all of our terrible audio. If you like the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes, and come and find us in the pits at a grid live to say hello.